Morning, everyone. It's good to see all of you out. It's a pretty good day. It would be better if we got more rain or more sunshine, right? But we'll take the rain that we can get. You're stuck with me again this morning. I do want to say that I appreciate the opportunity to speak again, and hopefully our study this morning together will be profitable. If you have a Bible, please turn to John the 14th chapter. John 14. We're going to read some verses there in just a moment. But first, I have to give a little story as a background. In 1970, my family moved from Huntsville, Alabama, back to Orlando, Florida. I was in 10th grade at the time, which you guys can do your own math in terms of how old that makes me or whatever. And this put me, as once again, as a story of my life, in a new school. That was back in the olden days when it was high school was 10th through 12th grade. So, I was starting in the beginning there in this school. That's fine. Except that I had had biology in the 9th grade, and so I was going to take chemistry in the 10th grade. And they did that opposite in Florida. So my first period class, which was homeroom, do they do homeroom anymore? That was where you got the announcements and all that kind of stuff, was my chemistry class. And I was the only 10th grader in a class of 11th graders. All right, so I'm already behind. And I have to tell you that my social skills in the 10th grade were superb. And it came along about Christmas time, and this is a class where I really didn't know all that many people. I'd managed to meet one or two and make some friends. And we did this thing. You ever done the thing where you have a group of people and you got to draw names to give a present to somebody? And so we did this, going to draw names, and there's a dollar limit and everything. And I remember this vividly, but I can't tell you a lot of the details. I know I drew a girl's name. Okay, I can't tell you who she was. That's not that memorable. But this struck fear into my heart. Because not only did I not really know this person, she was a girl. What in the world was I going to buy and give this person that wouldn't make me a laughingstock? Well, I don't remember what I got. The only thing I remember out of that was that it did create some smiles, and they promptly gave it away to somebody else. That's how successful it was. Well, I didn't know this person. How do you get something for somebody that you don't know? It's difficult. Now, on the other hand, I like buying presents for my wife. We've been together about 38 years now. I know what she likes. And I know the kinds of clothes she likes and other things. And some of the things, like there was a Christmas, I remember my kids even talking to me. I was getting her some sort of kitchen thing. And they looked at me like, Dad, Mom's in the kitchen all the time. Why are you getting this pan or whatever? Because that's what she wants. She'll like that. And sure enough, she did. Because I knew her. Look at John the 14th chapter. This is the discourse that Jesus had with his disciples just before his crucifixion. Now, this is the last time he has to be with them, and he's going to be leaving. This is not a comfortable situation for his disciples to be thinking about this Jesus leaving. But Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled. Believe in God and believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way where I am going." But Thomas said to him, "Lord, we do not know where you are going. How do we know the way?" And Jesus said, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you know him and have seen him." But Philip said to him, "Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough for us." And Jesus said to him, "Have I been so long with you, and yet you have not come to know me, Philip? He who has seen me has seen the Father. How do you say, 'Show us the Father'? Do you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you, I do not speak on my own initiative, but the Father abiding in me does his works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me. Otherwise, believe on the account of the works themselves. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who believes in me, the works that I do, he shall do also. And greater works than these shall he do, because I go to the Father. And whatever you ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. And if you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. Now, there's a lot of interesting things in there. But you gotta really enjoy Philip and Thomas there, right? Because I'd have been right there with them, confused, not quite understanding what was going on. Because Jesus is saying, I'm going away, but you know these things. They're going, we don't know this. He says, but you know where I'm going. No, we don't. We don't even know the way. They still had some things to learn. And the really critical phrase in this is when Jesus says, how long have I been with you, and yet you have not come to know me? How is it that these disciples were supposed to know Jesus? They lived with him. They talked with him. They'd studied with him. They'd been at his side day and night for several years now. They were supposed to know him. And you know, that knowledge was going to be critical to them. Because when he's gone, they're going to be asking that question that was popular in our culture for a while, right? What would Jesus do? They're going to be in situations where they're going to have to ask themselves, what am I supposed to do now? And what I'm supposed to do is follow Christ, and so what I have to ask myself is, what would Jesus do? And in order to be able to answer that question, you have to know Jesus. Now, that's fine for them. They spent 3 years with him. You and I have a little bit of a problem, don't we? I've never met Jesus personally in the flesh. Never talked to him. Never seen him. But you know what? I'm supposed to know Jesus as well. So how do I know Jesus? Well, let's look here in these passages we read and see if there's not like a hint. Now down there in verse 14, there's a statement a lot of us can get our hands around, right? It says, if you love me, what are you going to do? You're going to keep my commandments. All right, that sounds like a good starting point. Let's see if we can just pull out the commandments. We're going to look. Now, we know about Jesus in the Gospels mostly. We've got four books that we can deal with here. We've got Matthew, we've got Mark, we've got Luke, we've got John. And if we turn over to Matthew, and let's just kind of page through a couple of things. Chapter 1, we've got the genealogies there, and we start with learning about the birth of Christ. Okay, that's good. And chapter 2, we've got the story of Herod and the wise men coming and then his escaping into Egypt. And then in chapter 3, we're introduced to John the Baptist, and John the Baptist is preaching to the people. And, oh, here's our first command that Jesus issued in Matthew, was in verse 15 of chapter 3, where he went to John for baptism, and he told John to permit it at this time, for in this way it is fitting for us to fulfill righteousness. Well, John did that. Okay, well, John followed his command. I'm not sure I see a lot in that command that's for me, but that's okay. We'll go down, and in verse chapter 4, we have the temptation of Christ, and he exchanges quite a few words with the devil. Chapter 10, he issues a very strong statement there. He says, begone, Satan. I like that command. I'd like to issue that one once in a while in my life, right? Begone, Satan. And then in verse 17, from that time on, Jesus began to preach and to say, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And we could go on and on. And what the point is if I'm just looking for the statements of Jesus where he said, do this or don't do that, how many am I going to find when I start boiling down Matthew and Mark and Luke and John? You ever thought about that? There's really not that many. And what's all this stuff in between? We got to chapter 4. And we didn't get too many commands that I could sink my teeth into here. Well, commands are good. We have to understand the commands of Christ, and we certainly have to obey the commands of Christ. But when we think of commands as statements or as legal points that have been made, standing alone, they're quite often a little difficult to handle. Anybody recognize the news lately? In Massachusetts, there was a fellow named Michael Robertson, who was 32. He was arrested in the year 2010. He was accused of using his cell phone to take pictures and to record videos up the skirts and dresses of women in the subways. Convicted by a lower court, and last week, that conviction was overturned. The court said that the laws against secretly photographing a person in a state of partial nudity don't apply in the particular case where he was got. Now, let me ask you something. Does that make any sense to you? But you see, that was a legal thing. We had this statement of legal intent, and the lawyers got to looking at it and picked at it and went, oh, well, I'm sorry. This little corner case over here, this doesn't apply to. They got around it. The people who drafted that first law, if you were to go back and ask them, what did you intend for this law to cover? You think they would have said, yeah. Now, the government got together and they hastily crafted this other thing that has all kinds of, you know, stuff in it to try to explicitly state, you know, under the conditions that this one covers. And you know what? Somebody else will figure a way around it. You know why? Because the law without the intent, the law without the Spirit, isn't going to help you a whole lot. Does that mean we can ignore the laws? No. But you have to understand them. And how is it that we're going to come to understand these things? Turn a look over to Mark, the 7th chapter. We're going to look at Mark, the 7th chapter, and begin at about verse 9. I'm going to read through verse 13. This is Jesus when he's talking to some of the scribes and the Pharisees, three parts of the Sanhedrin, the scribes, the Pharisees, and the hypocrites, and we'll get back to that in a moment. He's talking to them there, and he says, you nicely set aside the commandment of God in order to keep your tradition. For Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and he who speaks evil of father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, if a man says to his father or his mother, anything of mine you might have been helped by is korban, that is, given to God. You no longer permit him to do anything for his father or his mother, thus invalidating the word of God by your tradition which you have handed down. And you do many such things as that. You see, they were an expert at trying to analyze the law and trying to figure out exactly what applied and what didn't. I've done a lot of reading in one of the great books of Jewish literature, the Mishnah and the Talmud. And I'm always impressed by the nature of the thinking that a lot of these people went through in putting some of these things together. But inevitably, I'll hit the section where you look at it and you go, really? They thought they could work around the law that way? Because it was clear what they had in mind is they knew what conclusion they wanted, and so they would figure out some way to sort of put things together to circumvent the intent of the statement. And folks, if we're going to be pleasing to God, if we're going to keep His commandments, we better understand the intent, and it better not be our purpose to try to circumvent, to try to work around, to get to whatever comfortable place we want to be. You see, here, the people that Jesus has been talking to, the command was to honor your father and mother. That's a little generic, isn't it? Honor my father and mother. Well, okay. But, think about this. There's a greater command, isn't there? What did Jesus say the greatest commandment was? Love God. So, if I've got a choice between giving my money to God and giving my money to my parents, whom I may have some falling out with anyway, then if I give it to God, I followed the commands, right? See how that works? if you've got a conclusion you want to reach, you'll find a way to sort of piece things together and bypass the intent. So how do we get around that? How do we know the intent of the laws that God has given us? You know, it's kind of interesting. You ever thought about some of the euphemisms that we have for the Bible? If I were to say the greatest story ever told, what do you think about? Isn't that what a lot of people call the Bible and the book and the things that are in it? The greatest story ever told? Yet is the Bible one story? Trick question. Yes and no, right? It is one story. It's the story of God's salvation for mankind. But it's made up of stories within stories within stories. Why do we have all of those stories? My wife and I recently saw the movie Lincoln. I recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's a pretty good movie. But Lincoln was famous for his storytelling. And there's a spot in the movie where he starts to tell a story again when people are trying to get him to make a decision. And one of his people just kind of plugs his ears and runs out and he says, "Not another story!" We have a lot of storytelling around our house. Storytelling is how people learned for generations. Storytelling is how culture is passed on. Anybody ever heard of Aesop? The Greek, supposedly. 600 BC or so, wrote a bunch of fables, right? Aesop's fables. And very few of us would probably be able to quote a whole lot of them, but if I tell you about the tortoise and the hare, remember that? Yeah, that's an Aesop's fable. And how about the mouse and the lion? Yeah, that's Aesop's fable. What was the purpose of those? Was it just a cute little story? They were trying to make a point, and he had some lessons he wanted to learn, right? Why do we have all the stories in the Bible? Why do we have all the examples of people and places and what they did and how they lived? We have it to help clarify the intent of God's Word. We had a command for our kids when they were younger and we were traveling in a large gray van. We had 3 children and 2 benches. This didn't work well. That was back before the seatbelt laws, and so one of the children got to sleep on the floor. Now, you would think, as an adult, that the floor would not be the place you would want to sleep. But for children, the floor is the coveted position. And so whoever got to be on the floor would proceed to be tortured by the other two in some manner. The rule was, don't touch your sibling. That was the rule, right? And then we'd get this, "His blanket's on me." Like, get your blanket off of him. Said not to touch him. I'm not touching him. Well, that became this mantra, okay? The explanation behind the rule. When Debbie would put them down, she would start with the explanation, which sounded something like, "Keep your hands and your feet and your arms and your elbows and your hair and your blankets and everything else that she could possibly think of to mention off of your siblings." And it became the repeated story to where after a few times, the children would go along and repeat the story after her, right? As she's saying it. They'd gotten the intent, right? They'd gotten the intent. The story gets it. Turn over to the book of Numbers, the 15th chapter. I'm going to give you one example from the Old Testament. Numbers 15. This is a chapter that talks about a lot of laws, about offerings and sin and the offerings for sin. And beginning in verse 27, it lays down some guidelines where it says, "Also, if one person sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a year-old female goat for a sin offering. And the priest shall make atonement before the Lord for the person who goes astray when he sins unintentionally, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is native among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among them. But the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is a native or an alien, that one is blaspheming the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from among his people. because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment, that person shall be completely cut off. His guilt shall be on him. So we get this distinction here in a legal form, unintentional, intentional. But have you ever noticed what follows this? Beginning in verse 32, there's a story. And it says, "Now while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Sabbath day. And those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregations, and they put him in custody because it had not been declared what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, 'The man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp.' So all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as the Lord had commanded Moses." What is that story illustrating? Was that unintentional or intentional? Do we understand from this story how important God felt, the importance God placed on that distinction? Does that help clarify it? That's why it's there. Now, he could have told any number of different stories, and he can't possibly write them all down. But the ones that are there are the ones that we need to help clarify, to help understand. We get the examples. Stories are an essential part of teaching. So let's go back to John 14 where he says, "Have I been with you so long and yet you have not come to know me?" So how can we answer, what would Jesus do? Well, folks, we have to come to know Jesus as well. And if you want to come to know Jesus, you're going to have to spend some time in Matthew and in Mark and in Luke and in John and study the stories about Jesus and study the parables, the stories that Jesus told. And you're going to have to look at a large number of them to get a full picture. You see, there's the other problem that we have a lot of times. People like to pick and choose, right? I have discussions with people on a fairly regular basis on some of the science surrounding things like the theory of evolution or the Big Bang Theory and things like that. And there are some interesting science parts of that. But there are other parts where people are really quick to just sort of pick and choose what parts they want to see. And when you bring up something that doesn't quite fit, it's like, well, we never heard of that one, or that can't be true, doesn't fit my theory of what, you know, is going on. They want to pick and choose the stories. Now, you know, if you wanted to pick and choose your stories about Jesus, you could get very different pictures of Jesus, couldn't you? I love the story in Matthew 15, verses 21 to 28. Matthew 15, 21 to 28, Jesus is traveling, and he comes across a Canaanite woman who comes and begs Jesus to help her because her daughter is sick. Now, look up Young's Literal's translation of the verse there where Jesus said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and to cast it to the little dogs." Now, NASB and some of the other translations leave out the little part. It's a diminutive form there. In our vernacular, we'd say that Jesus would have said something like, "Is it meet that we should throw the children's bread to the puppies?" He wasn't putting her down. And she caught it because she said, "Even the puppies get to eat the scraps from the table." And that's when he said, "Your faith is great. Your daughter's healed." Now, what do we see in that but compassion that Jesus would have? She was kind of outside of his normal mission, but he helped her anyway. Or how about John 11? You ever, you know, got to memorize a Bible verse? Which verse are you going to pick if you want to memorize one? Well, you can pick John 11, 35, right? Shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. Wow. Look at that whole example and tell me if that isn't a very important verse in understanding Jesus. But if all you had was the examples of Jesus healing the sick and the compassion on the sick and the compassion that he had for the people that he was teaching, and the love and the emotion that he felt for those who were close to him, would that be a complete picture of Jesus? Now, all of those things are true. But would that be a complete picture of Jesus? I think that leaves out things like in John, the second chapter, where he went into the temple and found some people who were not following what he felt like would be God's law, right? What did he do there? He made a scourge and he drove those people out. Or how about Matthew 7, when he cursed the fig tree? Now, there's a little different side of Jesus. Or how about Matthew 23? We have to turn over there for a minute. There's a rich set of things there. We won't read all of it, but this is quite often called the seven woes. Because he starts out in verse 13, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from men. For you do not enter in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you devour widows' houses, even for a pretense make long prayers. Therefore you shall receive greater condemnation. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you travel about on sea and land to make one proselyte. And when he becomes one, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves." That's not a real pleasant side of Jesus there, is it? That's not the loving Jesus image that a lot of people want to hold on to. But it's part of him. It's part of understanding him. Remember, we've been studying in Jeremiah, those who've been in the class, where we've seen both sides of that. The love and the protection and the care of God. And yet the justice and the severity that he has. Folks, you've got to take them both together to get a whole picture. If you want to know Jesus, then you better look at all of these examples. Now, even there, we're going to have to think a little bit about it, right? You know, when you're driving in your car, and you think about a situation that comes up, whether it's you seeing an accident or you're in an accident or somebody pulls in front of you, whatever the situation is, and if the first thought that crosses your mind is, what would Jesus do in this situation? That's a good thing that it crossed your mind there. But the second thing is probably, I have no idea. He never drove a car. But does that mean that other situations might not be applicable? And isn't that why we tell stories? Because they express part of the universal truth of the lesson that needs to be learned. And so can I tell you in just a few minutes that I don't have left? All there is to know about Jesus and all that you should know? No, I can't. But when we ask that question, what does God want from us? There are clear answers. Now, we'll do one of my favorites then, Micah 6. I bet you thought I was going to go to Deuteronomy 6. I did that one last time. So we're going to go to Micah 6 this time, where he says, "With what shall I come to the Lord and bow myself before the God on high? Shall I come to him with burnt offerings, with yearling calves? Does the Lord take delight in thousands of rams and 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I present my firstborn for my rebellious acts, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?" Now, the first part of that, we need to think about it for an instant, for a minute, in the context of what we've been talking about. Pull it together here. Were the people under the old law commanded to give sacrifices? Sure, they were. And yet, he's asking a rhetorical question here, a series of them, that seem to indicate that's not really what God wanted. Complicated, right? No, it's not that complicated. Did he want the sacrifices? He told them to do them. They were supposed to do them. But they had to do them right. Okay, so how do we do this right? Well, that's the last three things. There's your commands. First one is, do justice. Sorry, it's a bit ambiguous. How in every circumstance am I going to figure out what justice is? Well, I got a lot of help because I got a lot of instances, a lot of circumstances, a lot of people to draw from here to figure out justice. Then he says the love, kindness. Have you ever noticed how that's phrased? He doesn't say be kind. He says that elsewhere. But in this case, it's not be kind. He says love, kindness. Wow, that's like being commanded to love your wife. It's like you don't have a choice, folks. That's a command. Loving kindness is something we have to do. That's tough. Well, what does it mean? Well, I'm sure that if I went around and polled, each of you could come up with an example of one of the stories that demonstrates that. And then to walk humbly with your God. And I think for a lot of people, this is the hardest. Because what it means is if we want to know, and once we build in ourselves an understanding of who Jesus is and what he was and what he wanted, that means that you have to put your will underneath his. Though no matter what you really would like or what you think would be okay or whatever you would like in this world, that's second. Walking humbly with God means humbling yourself before God and doing things his way. And folks, just like my wife issuing the statement of, you know, no touching, sometimes the commandments of God are like that in the sense that, there's ways we'd like to work around it. And we could find the holes. And we could work through, do all of the things that other people have done for generations. Try to get around the simple truth. The simple truth is that Jesus came and he died. And he gave us a chance to be in a covenant relationship with him and to know him. He gave us this word, all of it, Old Testament, New Testament, the whole works, so that we could know Jesus. And if you know Jesus, then you know what you need to do. And you need to put your life in subjection to his and walk humbly with your God. If you're not a member of his body, if you're not part of the group that has decided to be of the one heart, decided to be part of Jesus, then it's a good time to do that. Opportunity is always ready, always here. But even if you are, think back. Look at all of the examples. Spend some time in the Word and get to know your Savior. Because that's how you'll know what you need to do in your life to be right with God. Let's stand and sing.